This is The Wrap. Sportsnet 590, The Fan's Raptors postgame show.
It's 10:02. It's The Wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. My name is George Russick, alongside Andy McNamara. Raptors beat the Knicks at Madison Square Garden, 118-112. Raptors win six in a row, improved to 31-14 on the season. And Andy, you know what this reminded me of tonight?
What?
I used to play a lot of tennis with my ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
And I'd like to keep it competitive. You know, she would try really hard and, like, keep things close.
Yeah.
And I'd let her kind of get into the match. And then at the end, when I actually started trying, I crushed her like a grape. That's what this felt like to me. The Knicks were fighting, and then ultimately when the Raptors wanted to try,
and they
decided, they crushed the Knicks like a grape. You heard his call on the Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Eric Smith. E, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Didn't it feel like that this was just an inevitability that the Raptors were eventually going to beat the Knicks in this game?
Well, the most shocking news of all is that you had a girlfriend, first of all.
Well, I was going to go there next, Eric.
Oh,
yes.
Eric. That's not bad.
It did kind of have that feel, because it was one of those games where, you know, and these are the dangerous ones where you don't want to get caught playing down to the level of your competition. Now, that said, as we noted right from the get-go, this is a Knick team that has been playing much better lately, certainly better under Mike Miller, and they're not playing a lot of their youngsters. I mean, Barrett's hurt right now, but you're starting a veteran lineup that's not that bad. I mean, when you look around the NBA and look at some starting fives, I'm not going to sit here and say we're talking about a playoff starting five per se, but there's a lot of talent and a lot of experience in the lineup when you think about Morris, Randall, Gibson, Bullock, Payton. That's a pretty decent five overall, but when they're late in the game, kind of hanging around, that's a dangerous game to play for the Raptors. And I'm not saying that they let the foot off or that they intentionally did this, but you did kind of have that feeling that they could just drop the hammer whenever they wanted to. They, you know, had the lead at double figures. It was cut down to one. They built it back up to double figures. It was down to three. They built it up again. It was shaved all the way to an even 103 apiece with about, 3 minutes left in the ballgame before Siakam hit the three and then had the dunk as well. And you know, this did kind of have that sort of yo-yo feel to it where the Raptors just kind of felt that they could slam that door whenever they needed to.
Yeah, and Eric, they hung around, but after that first quarter, right, it was 28-20 for New York. I thought in this, listening to the call, there was a moment in the second quarter where Norm Powell, it's finished with 16 points on the night, went and he willed his way to the hoop. And it seemed like the Raptors, they were just a little lackadaisical or out of sorts. And he just, he had that, what he's able to do, him, Lowry, and others, willed his way to the hoop, finished the play, and it seemed like that kind of jolted the Raptors awake. Just his effort, just those little in-game things is what makes this team so impressive. I love it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, and I think he's very quickly become that guy as a bit of an energizer, in a sense. When you look to that second unit now, now that the Raptors are healthy, you feel for a guy like Chris Boucher, who was playing very well and certainly playing a major role in an undersized front court for the Raptors with one of Gasol or Ibaka missing so much time. But now, with Gasol and Ibaka and Siakam healthy, there's not a lot of time for Boucher. So my point being, you look at who's coming in now. Hungry, energetic, athletic type, young guy just looking to prove himself in Terrence Davis. Energetic, hustle guy, diving on the floor, bringing the defense, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson. Serge Ibaka certainly motivated, if nothing else, by the demotion, in a sense, back to the second unit after playing so well as a starter. And then a guy who's been coming on like gangbusters for the better part of I would say a month plus, but it's arguably the season, because he was coming on strong before he got hurt, and he's been just as strong and just as hot since returning from injury, Norm Powell. Those are four solid guys to be playing in that second unit, to be bringing that energy from all four of them guys, let alone if it's just one guy maybe that you need to give that energy to kind of lift the spirits, lift the vibe and the feel around the team. And certainly, as you noted, it was kind of Powell that seemed to take charge in the early going of this game.
Eric, barring something, you know, big happening at the trade deadline less than 2 weeks away, what is this rotation going to look like playoff time?
I think you're looking at it right now. I'm not sure if I would say that you're going to see the minutes shaved for any of those guys. Perhaps, and it was only 13 minutes tonight for Davis, perhaps he's a guy that ends up playing 8 to 10 instead of, 12 to 15. But other than that, I think you're pretty solid with your top eight rotation being, and I'm just staring at the board right now, not – listing this in any specific order, Ananobi, Siakam, Gasol, Lowry, Van Vliet, Ibaka, Powell, Hollis Jefferson. I think that's your top eight, with Terrence Davis being that guy that comes in as sort of that ninth man that sees some minutes. After that, I don't think you're going to be seeing a whole lot of Stanley Johnson or Malcolm Miller, for that matter. Matt Thomas is probably break glass and put him in when needed, when you need a shot and you need a three or something, or an instant injection in the offense. And it's probably kind of similar for Chris Boucher, because as good as he is, as versatile as he is, if you're healthy, and that's obviously the key, as you said, is staying healthy. If you're healthy, you're not going to play Boucher ahead of Gasol, Siakam, or Ibaka. So health and trades factored in, that's to me how things would unfold.
And Eric, how comfortable, big picture here, going into the playoffs with this group healthy? We know that the Bucks have been on a roll, eight in a row. How do you feel as it stands now that this Raptors team, as is with the lineup and rotation that you mentioned, how do you think they stack up?
I think they're right where they were at the beginning of the season, and I said this the other night, like, you know, trust me, I've been wrong on many things in my life, let alone wrong this season on many things. But I will say, and you guys, you know, we've talked about it over the course of the year, at the beginning of the season, I felt Toronto had every reason to believe that they could compete for the conference again. And there was no denying that with Giannis and with the talent in Milwaukee, the Bucks were likely the number one team, and they've certainly proven that, and they've gone out and done it. But after that, throw the rest in a hat. And I said it from camp, from day one. Toronto, Boston. I did not expect Miami to be this good, but put them in the mix now. Toronto, Boston, Philadelphia, Miami. You throw them all in that hat, and chances are, especially with Oladipo coming back and the Pacers not going away this season, you certainly have to include them in the conversation. So you've got, you know, five teams that are competing for those two slots at likely two and three. I don't think anybody's chasing down Milwaukee, but the Raptors proved last year that the Bucks can be beaten. Yeah, they had Kawhi Leonard, but can you do it again in the postseason? And I'll tell you the other key, too, is if things shake out the way that they likely, you know, could, would, should, and that's a dangerous game to play sometimes, if you can get that second seed, there's a very good chance that you would avoid seeing not only Milwaukee, but potentially not seeing Boston or Philadelphia until the conference finals as well. So if things shake out and you can get that 2-7 matchup and be put into that other bracket as well, and then face the eventual winner of the 4-5, assuming you were to move on, you know, you could potentially not see one of those top teams until the conference finals if you make it that far. Again, we're getting way ahead of ourselves,
right,
you know, with almost 40 games to go, but that's why I think it's imperative for the Raptors to get as high as they can, and that second seed would absolutely be huge for them. And I'll tell you, even in the short term, it's certainly big for them if Nick Nurse has any aspirations in a sense of wanting to coach one of the all-star teams in Chicago in a couple of weeks.
Does this second seed potentially in the East feel like what they did last year? We know Nick Nurse famously said on our radio station that as long as we get more wins than the Warriors, we'll have home court in the NBA Finals, and that worked out. Do you think that's the master plan of the Raptors here? Let's keep this thing going, because if we do want to have a deep playoff run, it has to be through the second seed.
I mean, it could be. To be honest with you, I haven't really looked at that, George, in terms of how it stacks up against the Western Conference, because I don't know if Toronto would have enough to ultimately have more wins even than the Lakers, who are steamrolling pretty good over in the West. And that said, too, the Clippers have been no slouch either. But that could be the case. I don't think anybody at this point in the East and potentially in the NBA is catching Milwaukee, but could you ultimately have the second best record overall to thus have the better record than the any team in the West? Yeah, I suppose it's possible, because you're certainly closer to the two LA teams than you are to Milwaukee. So that has to be on the radar. And at the end of the day, as cheesy as cliche, as it sounds, you know, nobody's going to say that they're going out to lose games. They're going out to try and win as many as damn possible, and they're probably still thinking, hey, we're going to try our damnedest to track down Milwaukee and catch that number one. But they just have to, you know, I think, you know, continue to play with the same focus, attention, drive that they've had of late in this six-game win streak, because it's almost like they've started anew. It's almost as if they've started a new camp to some extent, because they're finally healthy for the first time for the first, what, 2 weeks of the season. It was 6, 7, 8 games into the year that they were hurt, and now they finally had a healthy roster for the last 2, 3 ball games. This is the, you know, 40 games in, the Raptors finally got bodies back, and this has got to be like starting from scratch again for even Nick Nurse, trying to figure out that rotation and figure out minutes, and for guys to sort of reacquaint themselves with each other.
Eric, do you have any sense that something potentially could happen for the Raptors at the deadline?
At this point, I don't, and that's not to say that it won't happen, but I'm not getting any you know, major buzz. You know, as you guys can attest to, Toronto has been notoriously quiet in terms of scuttlebutt. There's not a lot of rumors that come out of this team, out of this front office. Oftentimes, when something happens, it seems to come as a surprise to almost everybody. I get the feeling, and this is even coming from a conversation I had last night with Tim Bontemps from ESPN, and he's, you know, obviously very plugged into the trade front and alongside with his colleagues with Woj and whatnot. He was making the point, and I thought it was a good one on the Hoop Show last night, where he was saying that it doesn't seem like there's a major trade market right now because of the fact that there aren't a lot of tradable partners or pieces. When you think of guys that could be dealt in a trade, let's just take for any, you know I hate doing the fantasy trade, so I'm not going to come up with names, but if Toronto were to make a deal for player X, a deal that's substantial enough for them to want to go out and make a trade, you know, in the last 35 games of the year, something like a Gasol deal from last year that makes them think that it's going to be the push towards the playoffs, well, who are you willing to give up, and who on your roster has value that you're willing to give up? Because that's the other key. We often look at this from, oh, the Raptors should be buyers. They should look to add talent. They should look to, but what's it going to cost? If it's going to come at a cost of an expiring contract, well, your expiring contracts are Fred VanVleet, Serge Ibaka, and Marc Gasol. I'm not sure you want to lose any one of those three guys from your lineup right now. If the cost is a young player that's up and coming, well, due respect to Terrence Davis, he doesn't make enough money to fetch you anything of true value in return because his contract's not going to match up with anybody you're coming back. So now you got to start looking at guys that actually make some decent coin that you're giving up. Thus, are you having to give up one of those expiring guys? So now you're losing a young piece in a Davis along with, let's say, an Ibaka. Or you're looking even further down the roster and saying, are you willing to trade OG Anunoby? Are you willing to give Norm Powell, now that he's finally turning a corner and proving into a bona fide guy every single night for this team? So I just don't know that the return is going to be worth the cost for Toronto in terms of what they're trying to do.
Yeah, Eric, I'm with you. Like, when I look at this lineup, barring, you know, some ridiculous blockbuster we don't see coming, the only thing I could see is maybe like a bottom of the roster kind of tweak, like real depth move. Honestly, I'm fine, and I love the playing the okay, wait, trade, how can we get better type of angle. I think that this Raptors team, if healthy, and even if not, we've seen what the bench can do. I'm feeling pretty good about this roster. Like, I don't think anything, you know, Masai and Bob, you know better than we do, but I'm feeling pretty good. I don't feel there's really much that you have to do.
I'll tell you, the most intriguing thing, Andy, that I could look at right now, and I hate to and I'm not calling a guy out by any means, but it's just it's a fact. It's kind of in black and white. Malcolm Miller might be one of the nicest guys in the world, in the league, that I've covered in 20-plus years in the NBA. And he's a good team guy, and he's a hard worker, and he's been up and down with the G League and, you know, Raptors 905, et cetera. And he's a good guy to have around. But in all of the injuries, if there's one guy that, for whatever reason, whether it be team fault, his fault, just circumstance, fluke, or otherwise, just didn't really seem to take that next step, it was Malcolm Miller. I mean, even O'Shea Brissett had a chance to flourish and to shine in opportunities and in games. And the reason I bring that up is, and listen, I'm not campaigning by any means for Malcolm Miller to go. I hope he finishes the season with the Raptors. I hope he gets a chance again and contributes big time to this team. But perhaps, if there's a move, as you say, if it's a minor tweak, is it really helping you? Or could it be, is there somebody out there, you know, in the free agent market currently right now or eventually that gets waived from the team that you pick up in that aspect, in the free agent market? You know, you could think right now of a Jamal Crawford as a shooter, a Jeff Green, guys like that. Andre Iguodala still out there as a chip if the Grizzlies were able to work something out with a team. So those would be the guys perhaps that you would look at. Can you accommodate somebody if they're waived, if they're released, or if they are currently sitting on the waiver wire, on the free agent wire right now?
Eric Smith is the play-by-play voice for the Toronto Raptors for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. E, thanks for this. You get to spend the night in New York, right?
We are staying in New York and then flying tomorrow morning to San Antonio.
Right. So what's on the docket for you and Jonesy? Blackout drinking?
Well, I doubt that. Not to the blackout point. And Jonesy barely ever partakes.
All right.
I get him to drink maybe one or two glasses of wine per year, I think. So I might be ditching Jonesy on a Friday night and finding my own fun.
All right, there he goes. Eric Smith, thanks for this, pal. Eric
Smith, guys.
The radio play-by-play voice of the Toronto Raptors. You watch him on Sportsnet as well. Straight ahead on the Wrap, the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, Nick Nurse, spoke after Toronto's 118-112 win in New York against the Knicks. Raptors improved to 31-14 on the season. Oh, and by the way, they've won six in a row. This is The Wrap. That's Andy McNamara. My name is George Russick. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You're listening to The Wrap. Sportsnet 590 The Fan's Raptors postgame show.
The Wrap on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. My name is George Russick alongside Andy McNamara. Raptors pick up a 118-112 win in New York against the Knickerbockers. Raptors improved to 31-14 on the season. Six wins in a row. The head coach of the Toronto Raptors is Nick Nurse. Let's hear his post-game comments.
Bit of a slow start. What did you guys do to kind of change the rhythm and cadence of the game?
There's a couple games in a row. We've had some slow starts here, and then the second unit came in with a little more juice. We flipped to the zone. That seemed to change the rhythm of the game again a little bit. Got us going, and then that group come out, start the third, you know, really good, and then the game got a little, you know, weird rhythmically, and tough game. They've doing a nice job. They're like I said before the game, they come out and they get it. They guard you. They're up. They're challenging. They're organized on D. They made it tough, and it was anybody's game really.
I think again you had like six guys between 16 points and 26. No one got more than 15 shots. Is that the way you want to build your offense most nights?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, to a certain extent, Doug. I think we're making the reads where they are, and we're taking what's there, right? And there usually is one or two guys that are going to be consistently up in numbers. And some nights, Serge is a little freer and gets a few more. Mark's a little freer, whatever. But it's been nice to see, all these guys scoring 15, 16, 18 points, a bunch of guys each night. It's good.
How concerned were you with the rebounding, Nick? It just seemed like they had lots of second chance opportunities.
Yeah, I think they're number four in the league, and I think as of late they're tops or right at the top in like last 10 or something like that. But they just got some big bodies, and they do a really good job of planting them right under the rim for the majority of the possession, right? And you're moving around and doing some stuff, and we didn't do a good enough job of moving them out of those spots that they planted themselves in.
We talked to Freddie on the radio. He said, we weren't rebounded anyway, so we might as well go to the zone and try to get stops. I mean, it just seemed like it was a chore all night.
Yeah, it was. It was. And again, it wasn't like we weren't aware of it or whatever, and knew that was important. And at halftime, we're at it again. They had 10 offensive rebounds for 20 points at the half. So it was it was kind of like, listen, if we start rebounding, limit them to one, we could maybe, break this thing open. But again, they stayed at it, and a couple guys got hot, and they started doing a good job of reading our double teams on the post. I'm just happy. I thought we made some great offensive plays down the stretch, right? We kicked out to OG for one, Freddie hits one, and Pascal did the last two, one drive and one three. It was a pretty good offensive execution we needed down the stretch.
Rondé's ability at the top of that zone to be very active and disruptive, is that kind of what sets the tone up there in that?
Well, yeah, with the first group, we usually put Pascal up there. We like to have that guy's got to cover ground. Most of the other guys are in a pretty much zoned area, and that guy's he's covering from the top all the way down to the rim sometimes. So that guy's got to be energetic and willing to do some work and some running. So, Rondé's just doesn't look the prettiest out there maybe, but he's pretty effective, right? He plays hard. He comes up with some plays. Like I said before the game, the team loves having him on the floor. I think he had a huge plus-minus tonight. Yeah. He impacts the game, and he's just with hustle and hard play.
You spoke before the game about getting Pascal to kind of being himself. How much can a couple big plays in a clutch situation like that help get him back where he needs to be?
Yeah, I thought we saw some more Pascal-like moments tonight. The start, straight downhill and in, a little bit more direct line drives, and then obviously the finish, right? And that's good. We haven't had a lot of
kind of white knucklers down the stretch here, and where are we going with that, and how are we going to play through that? And we did a good job, I thought, of managing, getting it to the right spots.
Is it simple, Nick, as give Pascal the ball? You've got a play call, but no. Give him the ball and let him make a decision?
It's we want him, you know, we're looking at an action for him, right? And we're trying to find a certain way to do it. And obviously, we were going out of coverage there, right, and it looked like, you know, he did it just right one time. You know, they didn't want to switch it, and they were jumping out, and he hezoed one and blew by on the kind of hand, the hand back or whatever. You know, there's a little moment there where, and then on the second one, it was he stretched them out a little further, and again, they didn't quite get back, and he just had room to pull the three. So really good by our guys to organize that right, get the spacing right, get the right guys involved, and then finish it off.
Coach, you lead the league in challenges. I know it was kind
you
of
do?
A... You do.
Awesome.
It was kind of a...
Awesome.
You know, I know you guys were making light of it early in the year.
We got to lead the league in something.
When you lost a few in a row, you guys joked about it a bunch. Is that something you're starting to get a better feel for and feel more comfortable with as the season goes on now?
Well... It's a really tricky thing, right? And I think that I think your first instinct is to save them to the end of the game, right? For a critical moment at the end of the game. However, there's been a couple games where I've used them in the first quarter when, you know, we're up like 28-21 and you feel like you really got a chance to kind of put your imprint on the game, and something will go with, you know, a charge or an and-one to get taken away from you. And we reversed a couple of those and end up, you know, 34-21 at the quarter rather than 28-25. And it just kind of has set, you know, so I think if it's a high-impact play, usually a charge that maybe is an and-one or something, or, you know, you want to maybe take a look at if you think you're right. Right, and that one Kyle's one of the league leader in charges. I just probably thought there was no way he wasn't standing there for about 5 seconds, and the guy ran him over. So I figured I'd you know, we'd taken a bunch of charges and hadn't gotten any of them called. So we needed, you know, we were playing good defense and not getting rewarded for it. So that's why I took that one there.
There is the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, fresh off Toronto's 118-112 win in New York over the Knicks. Raptors now 31-14 on the season, 6 wins in a row. They're gunned for 7 in a row Sunday afternoon in San Antonio against the Spurs. That's Andy McNamara. My name is George Russick. This concludes the wrap.
We did it.
On Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're going to morph into some Sportsnet Tonight action, and we're on till 1.
We are.
And we'll do that after the break. John Hoven, NHL writer, contributor for SiriusXM NHL Radio. The skills competition on the go right now, the hardest shot. And we had the 3-on-3, and the Fox Glow Puck came back.
Oh.
Lots to discuss. This has been the wrap on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sportsnet Tonight next along the Sportsnet Radio Network.